please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide, from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I am your host, JP John Potts. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, the former booker of the WCW 83 Weeks of Dominance, the man behind the NWO, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Doing good. It just seems like, man, the wrestling world's got so much going on. Maybe too much, too many shows. It's insane. AEW's got three or four shows a week. WWE's got three or four shows a week. Just crazy. But, man, Monday Night Raw ratings were at 2 million. They haven't seen that in a while. SmackDown was at 2.4 million. Roman Reigns segments go to between 2.8 and 2.9 million. So, I don't know. It's like the more they throw out there, the fans are still watching, especially WWE.
Okay, let me ask you this. What is AEW drawing?
So Dynamite is around 800,000-900,000 per week. Collision between 600,000 and 850,000, and then Rampage is, God, like 400,000, something low.
So all three of those shows don't even match Roman Reigns.
No. Nope.
Think about that, bro.
He's the man.
It's not knocking AEW either. I mean, there was on YouTube, there's a collection of, it's about an hour and a half long. Have you seen it? The Bloodline from the beginning.
Oh, no, I want to watch that. Okay, that's awesome.
Brother, I mean, you forget about how many great things. Kevin Owens getting handcuffed to the cage. I never saw that before in my life. Sami Zayn approaching one of the Usos about when Roman wanted to hit Kevin. Roman wanted Sammy to hit Kevin with the chair. He wouldn't do it and ended up hitting him with the chair. I mean, so many intricate things. But their matches have all been exciting, too, and it goes along with the storyline. And I said this, you know, I was at a I was at Conrad's place last weekend for his Patreon people.
Yeah, Top Guy Weekend. Yeah, awesome.
And I asked Eric, and Eric said it was better than the NWO. Which I said,
whew. I know I interviewed Eric like a month ago, and he said that. And I'm like, what? Better than NWO?
It was.
Wow.
Do you know why it was?
Why?
It's real simple. Did any babyface get over when the NWO first got together?
Oof, no, because Savage got beat. This guy got beat. Yeah.
No, don't even go there. They all got slaughtered.
Yeah.
Besides them getting over, they've made a bunch of baby faces on the way. It's the greatest. Whoever did that, it was, Jonathan Livens Siegel. Have you ever heard of that book?
No. Mm-mm.
It was big in the 80s, okay? It was about a different seagull that wanted to fly higher and all the shit. And the guy that wrote it, it actually comes from one of these islands I live off of. He said that he didn't write the book. The book wrote itself. He just sat there and was like, and I think that's what must have happened here, whoever wrote this thing. Because it just is amazing, amazing storyline. And the character development. Think about this. They can end shows with just their interviews. Pretty amazing.
And I just had a conversation with somebody, a friend of mine in the business a little bit. He was talking about John Cena and stuff. And I was like, you know what? I was thinking about Cena. Every year he was on top, less and less people watch, which means, yes, he's popular to the people that he's popular to, which is a decent amount of people. But he kept getting less and less viewers. So less and less people kept interested. And he got no one over, which was interesting. So then Reigns, since he's been champ, the ratings, shockingly, since they were going down for 20 years, they've actually been going up. They maintained for a little bit. Now they're going up, and he got over Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Drew McIntyre, Cody Rhodes. Like, he got over all these guys along the way. And it's funny, the Cena era, which everybody says is so great, was absolutely awful and led to less business, and him getting no one over. Reigns' era is leading to more business. The ratings keep going up, and he got four or five guys over along the way, including Solo and including the Usos. So there you go, seven guys he got over.
He actually got Jake Paul over too when he worked.
Oh, Logan Paul, yeah, yep.
Yeah, McIntyre when he worked with him in the Scotland.
Yep, yep.
Who else? I said
Kevin and Sammy.
Yeah, but the bro brother, the one who wrestles with no shoes on,
Matt Riddle.
Matt Riddle got Matt over. I mean, think about this. Stopping a slide of 20 years, and then your interviews are outdrawing three other wrestling shows.
Yeah, crazy.
Yep. Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were saying the last quarter hour, the 1 week with Reigns, when Jimmy, I guess, they were teasing the Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso, the turn, like who's going to be blood and who's not, did 2.9 million for the quarter hour. So that was, Reigns literally just sitting there talking and admonishing them. So that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite a draw to Roman Reigns. So to your point, when you said not to take the title off of him at Mania, you're right, because the ratings keep going up. Like, that was a pretty smart move.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
People, I heard all the people right afterwards saying, oh, that was, how could you possibly say that? I don't hear that anymore.
No, because the ratings are up.
Not even that. You think Cody, and I think Cody's a terrific babyface, they could have jumped from that story to write a story for Cody that quick?
No, and I guarantee he'd be getting the Cena syndrome, where he gets booed at by half the building if he won the title.
Yep, because if you watch this, the deeper we go, the more cheers Roman's getting. And I've seen all the people stick their finger up in the air now, haven't you?
Yep.
So, I mean, all the people said, oh, they did the absolute. And all these people that were saying that had never been in the back given a finish.
Right.
So,
yeah. That's funny when they interviewed Triple H, the dirty guys were asking him, like, oh, how come Cody didn't win? And, he kind of had like a smile on his face a little bit. He's like, because that's not where the story's headed. Like, he knows what he's doing, booking wise.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just can't believe that you and Eric are in agreement. Better than the NWO. Nothing's better than NWO. NWO saved the business. No? Didn't it? I think it did.
Yeah, it saved it, and I think this did too. I mean, they were headed strictly downhill.
Yeah, yep.
Very similar.
And it's funny, when you look at, like, the pandemic and stuff, they really focused on, like, storytelling and facial expressions and acting with Roman Reigns, stuff like that. And that's what really kind of slowly but surely got this thing over. It was, like, just the character development of all these guys. It was great.
Right, right. And to me, Sammy's character was... just watching him with his hand motions, his facial, his body work. It's been great. And Kevin, too. I mean, they all did a magnificent job.
Who would you have beat Roman? I mean, do they have anybody to even come close? Or are you going to keep the title on him to the next Mania?
Oh, yeah. How could you take it off of him?
I would.
If you took it off him, what would you have for the next WrestleMania?
I have no clue.
You got to know where you're going every WrestleMania.
Funny, though, if you look at the history of WrestleMania, no guy has been champ for four straight WrestleManias, even Hogan, because he would lose and then he'd win it back at Mania, right? Stuff. But it's crazy to think, like, wow, through the 40-year history of WrestleMania, he might be the first guy ever to be the champion four WrestleManias in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that it's either to be Cody, or do you put McIntyre in there, or do you put Sammy in there?
Maybe try to get The Rock. Okay. He ain't winning it, but try to get The Rock, yeah.
Well, isn't on Rock's contract he has to win?
I have no clue. I'm not sure.
I think that's in his contract.
Wow, that would be interesting.
But, okay, if he beats The Rock, where do you go from there?
Got to have a tribal celebration. Everyone's got to acknowledge him. That's Samoan. Bring them all in.
Yeah, but
this next feud, I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, so it's going to be interesting. They got our attention, that's for sure. So
yeah, yep.
Yep.
So the topic at hand today is the NWA Great American Bash 1987. We'll be focusing in just on the July 4th, 1987 show, which, of course, was at the Omni in Atlanta, Georgia. This show, like the previous year, it was a series of events held throughout the summer of 87. This time, though, this year only had three events versus 1986, which had 13 events. And this was the first really use of the War Games, the Match Beyond, which, of course, was an idea conceived by the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. What is going on here as far as War Games, which would be the main event? What do you know? Did you help Dusty create it? Did he ask you for anything? Because I know he's asked you for stuff before, but what about War Games Match Beyond?
No, I wasn't even, the territory.
Yeah, so in 1987, you're in Continental, you're in Florida. Dusty does, step in a little bit when they buy Florida, and him and the Road Warriors do a couple spots down there, but no real communication with Dusty in 87, picking his brain or anything?
Not really, no. I mean, we were off by ourselves at that time.
When you look at Florida at this point, though, obviously Dusty's exit and the Eddie Graham death, I mean, obviously everything is starting to hurt WWF's global dominance. Did you guys feel that, like, wow, Dusty screwed us, he left us here? Like, were you pissed when Dusty kind of hurt? I mean, this is years earlier, but when you see it, at the demise of it, the eventual demise, were you thinking, like, man, Dusty really, effed this up here with Florida?
No, I couldn't say that because they weren't happy with Dusty. And they said some cruel, cruel things. And Dusty left because he didn't want to listen to their bullshit. So I don't blame him.
What were they saying about Dust?
that he couldn't draw and that he drew big houses, but after that it was houses were territories hurt. Yeah, but you got to understand that. If you're going for big houses and you're loading the cards up when you go back to normal houses, a normal booking, you're not going to have a 20 matches on the card and, you know, flying guys in from all over the country. So I didn't blame Dusty. Not at all.
Seems like the normal ebb and flow of business for wrestling. That's what it seems like.
Well, that's what it should have been, yeah, but they didn't. They were so desperate they couldn't allow for a week to go by and then be down.
So Dusty obviously comes up with War Games, the Match Beyond. Do you love the concept? Do you love the thought of it? I mean, obviously, War Games is the steel cage, goes over two rings, obviously. There's going to be 10 guys in this one. In other years, there's 8 guys. But for this year, they're going to do a 5-on-5 match. You do the little coin flip. You know, obviously, 2 guys start, and then whoever gets the coin flip, you get a 1-man advantage for about 5 minutes, and you kind of go on from there. So it's going to be a longer cage match. Once all 10 guys are in the ring, submit or surrender. Do you love this match? Do you love the idea? Where did it come from?
Sure, it came from Dusty. I'm not a real big for or against it. It kind of goes against everything a cage match is for. You know, a cage match is the last match with a big feud. So you got 10 guys feuding with one another?
Here, Superpowers and the Horsemen. So, I mean, it does kind of make sense because you had the Road Warriors kind of feuding with the Horsemen. Obviously, Nikita and Dusty was really feuding with the Horsemen. So, kind of, and obviously, Paul Ellering is mixed with the Road Warriors as well. So, it kind of does make sense just as far as the faction's concerned, putting this match together, because all 10 guys were kind of feuding. Were they feuding? Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Were they built up to this kind of match?
Dusty and Flair were, like, as far as them putting their teams together.
They were singles, Dusty and Flair, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do they end up with the guys that they have no relationship with?
Well, remember when Nikita, when Magnum has that issue?
No, I understand Nikita, but how are the Road Warriors?
Well, they were kind of feuding with Arn and Tully. They were kind of feuding with the Horsemen.
But they weren't feuding with Dusty.
Well, Dusty kind of needed their help.
To me, it looks good on paper rather than the long-range thought process.
So WWE always did this too. When they'd Hell in a Cell, it would just randomly be in like December or whatever, and then people would just have to just be thrown in the Hell in a Cell instead of building up to it. This seemed like they were actually built up to something, and they needed to do something to take care of the Horsemen. I know what you're saying though. It's just like it's not like a personal issue type of thing, what steel cage used to be.
Right. And going back to what we talked about earlier, this Bloodline has resurrected long-term booking. And they don't do anything, I think, that in this day and age is we question everything. Everything seems to fall into place, doesn't it?
Yep. Hey, they had their own board games match. Remember Sammy helped the Bloodline win that one?
Right. And they have everything they got makes sense. And once you do that, it's so easy to follow the story. You know, you're not questioning anything. Like, we keep on every week talking about the Bloodline. Everything they do, they top one another, but they stay within their realm. That they don't go out and do something. They don't bring in. And they get everything they can out of a guy. People forgot, I think, that do you remember when this first started? Dominic was a babyface with his dad.
Yeah.
And they got that out of him. They got Ray and Dominic, and don't hit Ray again. You remember that?
Yep.
And look how far they've come from that. That's all I'm saying.
And if you look at Dominic, man, he's the maybe the biggest heel on the roster outside of Roman Reigns, obviously, but every time he holds the mic, they're booing like crazy. It was like almost old school wrestling, where as soon as the heel gets the mic, Bobby Heenan grabs the mic, and boo, boo. It's almost like that kind of sense from it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's absolutely great.
So here, for this show, obviously we're setting up War Games. You got the roof, of course, on the cage for this, the two rings. Interestingly enough, UWF was purchased by Crockett in April of 87. So you got UWF guys here. Championship Wrestling was purchased by Championship Wrestling in Florida was purchased by JCP here in 87 too. So then you have the Florida guys. It's almost like there's going to be 12 matches on the show, but we'll skip through some of them real quickly. But almost so many guys in this card, so many. Do you like that? Do you absolutely hate that? It's almost like AEW now. They bought Ring of Honor. They bring in all the Ring of Honor guys. It's almost too much talent, no?
Well, they didn't have really time to blend these guys in, right? I mean, nobody knew who they were, most of them, right? They weren't working for Jimmy's company. Very hard, very difficult.
And if you look at it, it's just like, wow, is that really, necessary to buy UWF and buy Florida? Or is that almost a waste of money to do that? I know he's trying to compete with Vince, but do you think that was a waste of money for JCP in the end?
Well, they went bankrupt, right? Should they have been buying them anyway when they were that far in the red? I mean, somebody didn't pay attention where they were.
Right, just like the Kansas City, UWF, and CWF, just let them all die on their own and acquire whatever talent you want to scoop up. You don't need to run those towns or run the territory, so to speak. You know what I mean? It just seemed like almost like a waste of money. He was trying to copy Vince, but it was too little too late.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. He was just trying to copy Vince.
Now, we'll talk about the match later as far as War Games, but I do want to mention J.J. Dillon just gets severely injured in the match. He hurts his shoulder from one of the Road Warriors kind of doing throwing him over his head gimmick there, but he lands right on his shoulder and really injures himself. So they'll have another War Games at the end of the month, July 31st, and JJ is replaced by the War Machine, which is obviously Big Bubba Rogers, aka the Big Boss Man, under a hood. So just an interesting little note here that War Games, sometimes can be not the easiest match to do physically. A lot of the guys do get hurt and do bleed a lot in these matches.
Yeah, yeah.
I know JJ is your boy. I know, I'm sure you heard that story before. Yeah, hurt by the Road Warriors at Board.
It's their fault, the Road Warriors. They just indiscriminately threw them up over the head.
Interestingly enough, War Machine, a.k.a. Big Bubba Rogers, he gets used okay. I mean, obviously with Cornette and doing the different things. So he is used well, but as soon as Vince gets a hold of him in the WWF, man, he becomes a huge star as the Big Boss Man, because Hogan's feuding with him pretty much immediately. I mean, he just became a huge star. Do you think Dusty may have dropped the ball a little bit on Big Boss Man, a.k.a. Big Bubba Rogers?
I think it was all over a payoff.
Really? Wow.
In Pittsburgh, when they went in there and Dusty and Bubba turned people away, and Dusty was saying how much Bubba got. It was half of what he got. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
It was half of what he was. Well, hypothetically, we'll say he was saying he got a 10 grand payoff. He got a 5 grand payoff, and it pissed Bubba off.
Damn. Okay. Interesting. Because it just seems like they were doing something with him, like giving him a decent push here. But as soon as Vince gets a hold of him, it's like he gets like the rocket put to his ass, because he gets to feud with Hogan. And really, I mean, the Twin Towers are feuding with Hogan. They were like the big basically bridge between Hogan and Savage feuding when the Mega Powers explode, which did so much business. Maybe Hogan's best feud money-wise. It all predicated on him feuding with Boss Man beforehand and having the awesome cage match, Saturday night's main event, main eventing MSG, and having a sellout cage match there too. So it just seemed like, wow, man, you had something with Boss Man, and obviously Dusty blew it with that one.
Well, I don't know if it was Dusty's, because he didn't write the checks.
Well, yeah, the Crockett blew it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So with this show, like I said, we'll go through some of the matches. We don't really need to dissect some of them, but there's 12 matches on this card. Some of it almost seems like Super House Show matches. I know they're going to tape it. They're going to put it on VHS. And if anybody has it, it's worth a ton of money. And the cover of it's an awesome drawing of the War Games of the Cage of all the 10 guys in it. But it's almost like, wow, why are some of these guys in the card? And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the first match is Kendall Windham. This is July 4th, 87 at the Omni, Atlanta, Georgia. Kendall Windham defeats Gladiator number one. Does that really need to be on a major card? Or Gladiator number one is Gary Royal underneath the hood. Does that really need to be on the card?
No, but they had just bought in Florida, right?
Yes.
Kendall was an instrumental part of the Florida territory. You had to give your guys, your main guys, their payoff. They've been struggling with money down there. So, go ahead.
So after Kendall defeats Gladiator number one, we have the second match. Sting, who's fresh off the UWF, defeats Thunderfoot number one, a.k.a. Joel Deaton. Another thing, okay, have these guys, you know, you have Joel Deaton coming in, you have Sting coming in fresh off Watts' UWF that you just bought. I guess trying to get everybody on the card kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know who they are at this period, but I don't know much about them, you know what I mean? I didn't go to UWF but a couple of times from Florida to wrestle the Dog, you know.
So then we have two more singles matches. Lasertron, which is, of course, Hector Guerrero, defeating Mod Squad Spike. What do you think about Lasertron, that gimmick? I mean, it's very, I guess, 80s, is a nice little 80s gimmick for Hector Guerrero. It's actually not bad, but it's actually kind of a cool look.
It's a cool look, and it's a very 80s gimmick.
What do you think about Hector as a worker?
Oh, great. Fabulous is Guerrero, you know.
You think he lacked the charisma? Like, as far as the family goes, I mean, Eddie had charisma out the yin-yang. Do you think that Hector had, you know, lacking in that department a little bit?
Maybe a little, but he was never put in the position that Eddie and Chavo Jr. were. Chavo, rather, was, you know what I mean?
Who do you think, outside of Eddie, who do you think was the best worker as far as Guerrero? Chavo, Mondo, Hector?
Chavo Jr. and Chavo. Chavo drew a lot of money in L.A. I mean, he set records. Him and Piper. I mean, he did very well in Texas. The father did, you know, well all over Texas, California, L.A., San Francisco. I mean, the father was a big draw, too.
Gory. Yep.
Yeah, huge.
I think some of that Piper Chavo feud, I don't think we'd be able to do that today. Some of the stuff that Piper was saying.
No, you can't.
The hot tamale stuff and the other stuff. Oh, Piper's racist. But I mean, it got over like Rover over there.
But people didn't say that back then. Everybody
No, of course not. Yep. Yep.
So, I mean, it just goes to show you how maybe advanced we've become.
Then the next matchup, Jimmy Valiant defeats Mod Squad Basher. So James Jefferson, Mac Jefferson, they were the Mod Squad, Spike and Basher, kind of an enhancement upper or a lower card guy, just a lower card team. Again, do they really need to put Jimmy Valiant one-on-one against Mod Squad Basher on this big card? I don't know, but they did. It just, I don't know, like just putting the Mod Squad in singles matches, maybe just do a tag match if you really wanted to get them on the card?
I don't know why they did that. I mean, they're a tag team. I don't have any clue why they did it, unless they get paid more being in singles. I don't know.
So the next match up, Barry Windham defending his NWA Western States Heritage Championship. Barry Windham defeats the one and only Rick Steiner, who is fresher off UWF at this point. So Windham over Steiner, kind of a shorter match, but obviously two names that people are going to recognize. Windham in 87 was on fire, just an unbelievable worker, had some unbelievable matches with Flair in 87 in NWA and in Florida as well. So Wyndham definitely his year. I just love the look of the Western States Heritage title. If anybody hasn't, just Google it, but the look of that title is awesome.
Yeah. And Barry was a hell of a performer.
And Rick in 87, not that he's green, but obviously he's very, very young to the business and fresh off UWF here. I mean, you could see he's like a pile of clay. They got something with Rick Steiner here in 87, but not quite, you know, main events level Rick Steiner as of yet. I mean, he's very, very young to the business.
You're absolutely right.
Do you think that Barry Windham, not his demons caught up with him, but do you think that maybe he could have been Flair level and never quite got there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What held him back?
Injuries.
Man, he was, if you look at some of like Flair's best matches, best opponents, he's got to be up there.
I don't know who would be a better opponent. I think he's a better opponent than Steamboat was.
Wow, I was going to say Steamboat. Okay.
You know, Rick never had a bad match with Barry. The people on their feet the whole way. Barry was over more than Steamboat.
Yeah. You think so? Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Next.
Do I think so?
Yeah.
Okay, Chi-Town Heat. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
The world champion, Ric Flair, comes out with a bevy of beauties, right?
Oh, Chi-Town Rumble, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Bevy of beauties, right?
Yep.
What did Steamboat come out with? His wife.
A beautiful wife and kid, baby. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Please. Tyson Fury do that?
No.
Ali, Joe Frazier, come on.
Nope.
No.
Conor McGregor, nope.
No.
The next matchup here, probably your favorite tag team of all time, Ron Garvin and Jimmy Jam Garvin with Precious defeating Vladimir Petrov and the Barbarian with Paul Jones as the manager. Ronnie Garvin and Jimmy Garvin here were getting quite a push. Ronnie Garvin would eventually in September beat Flair for the world title. So he's 2 months away from a world title run here, but they defeat the legendary Vladimir Petrov and Barbarian. Do you like Jimmy Jam Garvin and Ronnie Garvin here? And do you like them both being title contenders?
Yeah, they were going to put the belt on Jimmy.
Can you see him as the world champ?
Back then, the angle was so big. Yeah.
Because of Precious?
Yeah. It was so hot, that angle.
What about Ronnie Garvin as world champion? Did you like that? Did you not like that?
Ronnie was a...
What did you think of Ronnie Garvin as world champion? What do you think about Ronnie?
I don't think he ever had, check this, a title defense.
Really? What about against Nate?
That was when he lost.
Interesting. I'll have to look that up. I don't recall. I don't know if he ever beat Flair like before that, like in any sort of rematch. I'm not recalling. I know that obviously he beat Flair, held the belt for a little bit, and then he loses at Starrcade 87 in November.
He was only in tag matches, I believe.
Why is that?
That's where Dusty booked it.
Why do you think Rod won the title to begin with? Shake it up? Shake things up?
No, they had promised it to... Jimmy, and figured, you know, he didn't want to go back his word, so he'd give it to Ronnie. Because Jimmy was out for a while.
Did you think that was the right choice, Ron Garvin as world champion?
Well, if you tell somebody that belt is so important that it's going to transpire, you got to do something. You know what I mean? I admire Dusty in one way doing it, but I would have held off till Jimmy was healthier.
Do you think Ron was over enough to be the champ?
No. Nope.
When you look at him versus Flair, those matches are unbelievable. Like that, yeah. I love their chemistry. Obviously, Flair can work with anybody, but him and Garvin are awesome together. Ron is almost underrated in a certain aspect, or maybe underappreciated, because I really thought he was a good worker, good hand. He could have good matches with a lot of guys. And I thought he was great with Flair. I mean, those matches were great. I didn't mind him as world champ. It's only, I mean, less than 2 months, but I mean, I don't mind him as world champ.
Oh, I didn't either. I mean, he worked very hard, but the thing was, Ronnie didn't go into many big territories. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then his career was mostly in tag teams when he was with Terry Garvin. And then he was with Jimmy. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's almost like a little bit of a shock booking by Dusty. Yeah. Like the crowd is absolutely shocked when he ends up winning the title.
Yeah.
So then the Lightning Express, Tim Horner and Brad Armstrong defeat the Angel of Death with and Big Bubba Rogers with Skandar Akbar to retain their UWF tag team titles. Lightning Express, Tim Horner and Brad Armstrong. Pretty damn good team right there.
Yeah, but they were in the UWF, right?
Yep, this was a UWF tag team title match.
Yeah, and who was the tag team? It was Angel Death, UWF, but wasn't Bubba?
Yep, he was UWF too at this point. They actually got him from the UWF.
No. Big Bubba Rogers?
Yeah, he was a former UWF World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, but he came from them. He was, you remember when he was Jimmy's guy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
That's how he broke in the business.
Right.
He was doing jobs in Atlanta, and then Dusty made a big bubber, and he smashed the chair over his head, and then they went to Pittsburgh. So he was in and out of UWF.
Yep.
So he wasn't there full time, was he?
No, not as far as I know.
Okay.
But obviously, Crockett gets his hands on him. They're kind of giving him a bit of a push. And then all of a sudden, obviously, he goes to WWF, like we mentioned before, and has that awesome feud with Hogan for a while. But when you look at this, obviously, again, they're putting UWF guys on the card as well as the Florida guys. But there's a lot of guys on this card.
I think they really messed up. With that UWF, it was like a shoot. I mean, us against them. Do you know what I mean? You've heard the stories.
Yep.
It was so ridiculous. You know.
When you look at it, too, it's, I don't know, like, it didn't bring in more business to Crockett. You know, it hurt the pocketbook.
And that should have been two different companies. It could have been like NWA before the NWO, rather. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure.
It could have been the American Football League against the National Football League.
Yep.
Yeah, they didn't do themselves any favors there.
Definitely.
But they had an attitude. With both sides had an attitude. UWF guys were happy that Bill sold, and they felt like they were the second, you know, they were the redhead cousins. And I don't even know if you can say that anymore, redhead cousins, right? It's a redhead league. You know, there was animosity there, too. You know, you have two world champions, you know? Kind of goofy.
Very, very goofy. Yeah. And as far as the next matchup, again, a little bit of a UWF flavor. Chris Adams defeats Black Bart with Skandar Akbar via DQ. So even more UWF guys in the show. Skandar Akbar, did you like him as a manager? I know, obviously, Tim more of a territorial guy, and we really never made it to quote-unquote the big times, but a lot of people love him as like one of the old-school managers.
I thought he was very good. He played his role. He stayed in character. He was a heel all the time. He always had this tremendous wad of cash on him. And, you know, he's supposed to be a rich Arab. And he threw that money around. He was very, I mean, JP, I'm telling you, he had probably, every time he went out, he had $3,000 or $4,000 on him. He stopped at a 7-Eleven, opened that up, and there'd be all hundreds, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Everybody, you go to these little towns, everybody thought he was, you know, really an oil prince.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So he had Akbar's army, but of course, everybody knows Devastation Inc. was his big heel faction. Really just Mid-South, world-class, a little bit of global kind of mixed in there. I think most famously, maybe known for the Fireball, maybe? Is that kind of his claim to fame?
I guess so. And then remember him, and that's, you mentioned him and Gary being together, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a good thing. I liked him and Gary together.
As far as Chris Adams is concerned, too, you know, they don't really do much with Chris Adams, but another guy who's a good talent for sure.
I thought I got to work with Chris a couple of times. And he was a fabulous performer. Fabulous performer. I mean, he could move. Everything he did made sense. He was ahead of his time. He was really, really good.
So the next matchup, we have the Fabulous Freebirds, Buddy Roberts, Michael Hayes, and Terry Gordy, defeating Ivan Koloff, Manny Fernandez, and Paul Jones in a six-man tag. Here's a couple guys from the Mid-South that are definitely draws. The Fabulous Freebirds.
Yeah, yeah. Fabulous performers. I love the difference of each one of them brought to the table.
Absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect together. Buddy, the little workhorse who can, you know, kind of take the fall. Michael was the big mouth, and obviously Gordy's the awesome worker who's just the bruiser, the monster, the heater. I mean, he was the man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Then we have the Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express. This is a tag team championship match. Interesting because Midnight Express are the USA tag team, US tag team champions, and the Rock and Roll Express are the NWA tag team champions. So this match ends up going to a double, goes to a disqualification. The Rock and Roll Express then ends up getting the victory. But that means that the Midnight Express are still the US tag team champions, and that means that the Rock and Roll Express are still the NWA tag team champions. So a little bit of a schmoz finish just to keep everybody with their title belts.
Right. I'm not so sure, I like that kind of finish with two champions.
Almost like you knew it was coming. Like, I don't think they're going to be double champs, that kind of thing. Yeah, it's not like too much of a schmoz.
Yeah.
That is possibly the greatest tag team feud of all time. The Midnight's and Rock and Roll Express never had a bad match. They drew in many different territories. Just one of those things where they just had awesome chemistry against each other.
Well, they're fabulous workers. I don't think it could be any better than those guys.
And here, of course, is Eaton and Lane with Cornette. So Condry's gone. Who'd you like better, Eaton and Lane or Eaton and Condry?
I was thinking about that the other day. I mean, it's a toss-up. And then there was, before that, there was Condry and Phil Hickerson as a tag. Yeah. So, I think Trance, as you go further in the change in the wrestling business, maybe Stan was the new guy to go with, you know what I mean? Not disparaging Dennis at all, but Stan, you know, he had that look. So I think he was the guy to go with Bobby.
Perfect. It's crazy to think, like, you can have a legendary tag team that one of the guys gets replaced and the team is just as good with the new guy. Rarely happens like that. Usually you have a downfall, but maybe like you said, maybe they even got better.
Yeah.
Can't forget too, Dennis Condry and Randy Rose, and obviously Norvell Austin at one point. So a lot of different members of the incarnations of the Midnight Express.
Right.
Next up, we have Dr. Death Steve Williams, fresh off of the UWF with Magnum TA versus Dick Murdoch. And Steve Williams defeats Dick Murdoch, who was with Eddie Gilbert. So even more UWF guys, and this time it was a Texas death match.
Well, how much had people seen UWF clips off of Crockett TV. Not much, right?
Nope. Right.
So you're advertising these matches, hoping to get something out of it. And are you really getting anything out of it except exposure for the guys?
It's
what
true.
Do you think?
That's true. It's one of those things where, like, I don't know, I'm just having a hard time with so many guys being on the show or on the card. You know what I mean? It's just...
You don't know who they are?
Yeah, and you're not familiar with them yet as you probably should be. Yes, yes.
Right, right.
AEW is the same problem today, always.
Let me ask you that Forbidden Door thing. Do you think most American wrestling fans know those Japanese guys?
Some of them, yes, because they've been over here for about 10 years. But some of them, absolutely not.
And they get a vested interest in them?
I would honestly say only a couple of them. They probably have vested interest. Not all of them, no.
How many out of a couple?
Tanahashi, Okada, for sure. And maybe Naito. So probably three guys at the top, yeah.
And Evil. Okay, so maybe there's four. How many... How well do you think they drew on this pay-per-view?
Better than last year, which did 135. So they're saying between 150 and 160 buys. Yeah,
good.
So good, good. And they said the attendance, they did 15,000 people and did a $1.2 million gate. So they said it was actually more money than last year with this. So it actually went up.
Well, good. I mean, I'm not knocking this, but it's like we're talking about this, no people seeing people, right?
Right.
Look at UWF guys. They should have had be having a clip of this something every for 52 weeks. And we get to know somebody. We see a match from Japan where we're going to have one guy's going to wrestle Jericho, another one's going to wrestle Daniels, and then we got another one going to wrestle MJF or whoever.
Yep.
And you show these guys week after week and have them do, if they can't do interviews, you put the, you know, the language barrier on the bottom and let the people get to know them. It's hard to draw when a guy's just casually known, as we're seeing here, right?
Yep. It can be a bit rough for sure, but it actually looks like Forbidden Door is starting to catch on, I guess, because they're doing better business this year.
Well, they went up from
I think it was 127 or 130 to, I think, between 150 and 160.
Okay.
So it went up about 30,000, between 20 and 30,000 buys.
Right. And your expenses went up. So did it really help you?
I don't know. We'll see, right?
What I'm saying is, if you look at what we started talking about, the bloodline, because long-range planning, right?
Yes.
They should be showing something starting next week on all these guys that they hope are going to be here next year.
Keep everybody familiar, yes, right?
Yeah.
They're saying that New Japan and AEW want to have this big relationship together because they're afraid WWE and UFC are going to start merging and doing stuff together. So they want to make sure that they keep the audience they have and maybe grow together.
How is that going to work?
I have no clue.
The UFC and WWE, I don't think are going to work closely together, but they're under one roof.
Yep.
These guys are worlds apart, and they're under two completely different roofs. I hope they do well together. I'm just saying it's apples and oranges when you compare.
It looks like they were getting some sort of help. UFC was getting help with WWF from like video packages and production and things of that nature, which UFC really, really struggled in. I mean, people can say what they want, but the UFC production value compared to WWE was pure shit, okay. To be honest. So, I mean, they apparently were helping them with their production. So I think that would be a big boost to UFC.
And I think you're absolutely right. So they got something out of it without crossing their talent over.
Yep. And Kevin Dunn, I mean, his crew, they're probably the best production people in the business, period. You know, maybe outside of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough here, Big Bubba Rogers is a UWF champion. He loses a week later to Dr. Death, becomes UWF champion in July 11th of 1987. So even though they have sold, they're still doing title changes and they're still pretending UWF is kind of their own entity. And then Dr. Death is the last UWF champion as they kind of get rid of that title. But just interesting, they're still kind of pretending they're, you know, an entity, even though they're not really an entity because Crockett bought them.
Really?
I don't know if I like that. I don't know. I'm seeing a lot of that even today with AEW with Ring of Honor, how they're, you know, they're doing title changes and stuff. Like, is it really still Ring of Honor? I know they're trying to do Ring of Honor television, and they'll tape it in Florida, and they'll put it on Honor Club. But, I mean, AEW owns it. Is it really separate? I mean, it's one entity.
Are guys going back and forth?
Yes.
Well, how can, you know, well, it's, maybe they put Kerry Silkin as the owner of the company, huh?
Oh, that'd be nice. I just talked to Kerry yesterday. That would be nice. Yeah.
How's he doing?
He's doing really good. Doing very good. It's funny. He didn't want to talk about ROH, but he kept bringing it up. So he did want to talk about ROH. I knew it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here we are, the main event of the evening, the Superpowers versus the Horsemen, the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, with Paul Ellering, who was obviously in the match too, Nikita Koloff, and the team captain, Dusty Rhodes, versus the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, Tully Blanchard, and J.J. Dillon, with Dark Journey in their corner. Obviously, this is War Games. This is the match beyond. This is when all 10 guys are in the ring together. You have to submit or surrender. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of legit injuries here. There's a lot of really, really tough, hard-nosed match. Five-star match here from Dave Meltzer. So I personally would agree with him on that one. I would go out of my way to watch this. War Games, great match here. The Road Warriors, Ellering, Nikita, and Dusty get the win. Obviously, J.J. Dillon taps out here and loses for the team. He surrenders, and the winners are the Superpowers as they go over here in War Games.
How did Doc Journey, was she from the UWF?
Yes, but she would also then become Tully's manager for a while.
Okay.
Good old Miss Linda there. Yeah, Dark Journey. Yep.
Yes.
But she was from Mid-South.
So did people know her from Mid-South? I mean, from Crockett?
So when they bought them in April, this is July, so 3 months earlier they bought it, she became Tully's manager, and then...
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep. So, yep, they're familiar with her at this point, I would think.
Yeah.
But what do you think here, though? Obviously, baby faces need to go over in War Games?
Well, you have to protect the Road Warriors, right?
I would think so.
Yeah. And Dusty, yeah. Yeah.
And Nikita, right? Keep Nikita strong, too.
Yeah.
Do you like the horsemen of Flair, Arn, Tully, and Luger, that four horsemen group in?
I do like them, yes. But I like Barry in there.
What about Ole? Because obviously they beat up Ole and they, you know, they kick him out, and Luger is the new guy who they're pumping up that's a part of the future of wrestling here. Do you like that though? Ole over Luger, or you like Luger over Ole?
I think I like Luger over Ole.
You know, really? Why?
New generation. New generation.
If you look at it behind the scenes,
right,
and Arn would tell me this, of course, and Tully said the same thing. Luger would hang out with them, go drinking with them and stuff, so they were actually like a cohesive unit. Right. You know, he's the young guy, but he's hanging out with them. He wants to be like them. He said Ole wanted nothing to do with them outside of the business. Didn't want to go drinking with them. Didn't want to hang out with them. You know, he's taking his son to wrestling tournaments. I'm not hanging out with you guys.
Yeah.
Like, he loved Arn. He loved him, but he didn't want to hang out with him.
No, and Ole was to himself quite a bit.
So just to put a capper on this one, they do have the July 18th Charlotte, North Carolina Memorial Stadium part of the tour, which Dusty defeated Tully in the main event there in a lights out barbed wire ladder match for $100,000. Then they go to Miami, Florida in the Orange Bowl on July 31st, 1987 to finish off the tour. Oddly enough, you were on that tour, by the way. You're on that match. You defeated Dory Funk Jr. in a Texas death match. So you do make your way to the last leg of the tour in July. Of course, it's in Miami, so it's your Florida. It's in your territory.
It's but in you beat the Dory, right?
Yep, you beat Dory Funk. I can't believe that. What a win.
Yeah, I've worked with Dory quite a bit. I worked with Dory in San Francisco when they were running San Francisco out of L.A., and I was the babyface. When they were running San Francisco out of Florida, rather, and I was the babyface. Yeah, I got to work with Dory quite a bit.
That's a huge win there for you. You're beating Dory Funk Jr. at the Orange Bowl.
Yeah.
And, of course, the main event of that show was the Road Warriors, Dusty, Nikita, Paul Ellering, the Superpowers again, defeating the Four Horsemen, Rick, Arn, Luger, Tully, and the War Machine. The War Machine obviously was Bubba under the hood, and he takes the loss there because JJ was injured and couldn't compete in that match. So that's the end of Great American Bash 87. What do you think about the Bash Tour 87?
The little bit I was exposed, they drew a big house. And do you see the number? Wasn't it like 27,000 people?
Over 25,000 was what I read. Yeah, so it's probably right around there. Yeah, they did. They drew well, for sure.
Yeah.
Sold out the Omni and did well in Charlotte, the Memorial Stadium, too.
So obviously they put the right things together. That's all that matters is what you draw.
And hey, 2022 and eventually 2023, they were still using War Games. So Dusty's legacy, his lineage, I mean, it lives on. They're still using his gimmicks and his ideas today.
Right, which is cool. I really enjoyed that. Dusty was way ahead of his time.
All right, we will save the rest of the questions here for next time, but let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website tmptempire.com. Kevin, what do you got?
No, I'm off a couple of weeks, so I'm enjoying it. So see about talking to that guy and fly me up there, okay, JP?
Yes, we'll do.
Let me know
yep,
this week.
We'll do.
We'll take it off that end, okay?
Yep, sounds good.
Thank you, baby.
Yep, thank you.
As quick as you can call me so I can make arrangements, okay?
Yes. Yep, we'll do.
Thank you, babe.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. See you right back here next time for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in Below the Waist Grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. With our exclusive offer, go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the Signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped.